Blog Talk Radio.
Carlo Radio. I got the blues. Bad.
Thank you very much. Here I go.
Chicago blues right there.
For sure. Yeah, so today's show is called I Got the Motherfucking Blues, because I lost my job after 10 years driving a United cab down here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Never been in a car wreck, never hurt anybody, never been in a fist fight or a DUI or, I don't know, whatever you want to pick it. I've gotten some speeding tickets, very few, maybe one every other year. It's
you never got a
ridiculous
DUI?
I've never had a DUI in my life. No.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. Oh, man.
Well, I mean,
no,
they have
too.
Moves.
He must have been, that's pretty lucky back in the day.
Well, not since I've been driving a taxi. Everyone does stuff when they're a teenager.
Right, yeah.
But, anyway, 10 years on the job, they brought me in. There was a fight that took place outside of my cab with two of my passengers, grown men, got in a fight. And, somehow I lost my job. I can never drive a taxi again. And they took my CPNC away, which is a Certificate of Public Necessity and Conveyance, which is authorized from the City of New Orleans, and I owned number 113. I'm cab driver 113. Have been so since January of 2008. Never caused any trouble. Got all my upgrades, all my updates. Got a brand new 2012 Toyota RAV4. Painted it, did everything you said, put the cameras in it. Then I had my CPNC certificate for 1 week. 1 week. Got my new license plate. And in 1 week, they took it from me because two grown men got in a fight that I didn't even get involved in other than to break it up. What happened was I've been robbed. There's no other way about it, and it needs to be fixed. And so the problem is I have no money, so it's very difficult to accomplish anything without that. Are you walking in a sandstorm? Jesus Christ! It sounds like you're. Are you on Nanoon or what's that? What's that?
I'm on.
Where does Luke Skywalker? Where did he grow up at? Tatooine or Tatooine?
That's exactly where I am. Yeah, I got three songs.
Tatooine. Here. You're on Tatooine, drinking Capri Sun. One of those little
I'm in the Star Wars bar, man.
Yeah, where's R2-D2?
R2-D2 and Han Solo.
You're Han Solo, and where's Chewie then?
In the Star Wars bar, man. But go ahead, that sucks, dude. I know. They stole your shit. You got to get it back, man. You got to fight for it. Sometimes if it's worth it, you need to go after it.
Well, I talked to some lawyers, and they all say I have a good case. And,
you do.
But I talked to several lawyers now, and they all told me I have a good case. I just need the money. I mean, it costs $2,000, so I don't have any money for that. So I don't know. So what I've been doing is I've been tweeting the mayor.
No, you should do stick up a cab.
Stop.
Pick up a cab driver, take his money, and then get your cab license back.
So I've been tweeting the mayor some good old-fashioned rock and roll songs, trying to convince him that, you know, I'm a good dude, and I just want him to just hear my side, let me explain myself, and I apologized. I talked to... we'll call him Mr. X today on the phone, and he told me I needed to apologize to certain people that I insulted. So I publicly apologized to D.A. McNamara, Malachi Hull, and Jay Munster for being for saying things that I shouldn't have. So I did that, and I'm doing it now, and hopefully the mayor will hear it somehow.
You had to apologize to who?
I just said who. If you weren't walking in a sandstorm, walking in a sandstorm, yeah, isn't there buildings, though? I mean...
No, there ain't no buildings. There's a desert. I'm looking for the beach. I've been looking for the water for 6 months now.
Can't you climb into a cactus or something? Where do you sleep at night?
I still got my flip-flops and my little inner tube thing. It's almost deflated now, but I'm still looking for the damn water. This is the biggest beach I've ever seen.
You're lost on the biggest beach ever, huh?
Biggest beach, man. I've never seen a beach this big before. But go ahead.
So, I'm trying to get a lawyer. I don't know. I have no idea what I was talking about now. Anyway, they took my job. I have no job. My investment's down the tube. I will have to go bankrupt. I would literally have to declare bankruptcy. This is there's nothing else I can do. I have no I can't pay the bills that I have without the taxi job. So I'm going to have to declare bankruptcy, and you know, I feel like sometimes I feel like I tried really hard in New Orleans, and it just wasn't meant to be, and oh well, fuck it. You know?
And I followed her to the station with my suitcase in my hand. And I followed her to the station with a suitcase in my hand. Well, it's hard to tell, and the train pulled up to the station, and I looked her in the eye. When the train rolled up to the station, and I looked her in the eye. Well, I felt lonesome, I was lonesome, and I could not help but cry. All my love's in vain. And the train, it left the station with two lights on behind. When the train, it left the station with two lights on behind. Well, the blue light was my blue, and the red light was my mind. All my love's in vain.
Colorado the night I got fired, and later on that night I turned on the news, and the whole damn city was flooding. Oh, oops. Okay, I guess I'm not going there. God, geez, sorry for bringing it up. It's not supposed to flood in Boulder, Colorado. The elevation is super high. There's something mysterious happening there. Probably something to do with people fucking up the world and the land, and you know, all that kind of shit. But if you look at history, that river in Boulder, Colorado, does not flood, and it certainly doesn't flood anywhere near what happened. It's totally an unnatural event that just occurred in nature.
Why? Well,
probably
happened
created by man.
Because you thought of it.
I wonder if RC Dwinner is going to call me today.
I'm calling.
RC Dwinner. Hi, Gina. I'm glad you called.
Hi, you know, I lost track of the time. I was writing a poem. I'm so sorry.
Great. My friend, my poet friend, G-Dog, is on the other line, whatever his name is today.
Oh.
What up?
So you know.
Just call me G.
Okay. Hello, G.
Or Dash. You could call him Dash.
Oh,
he
Dash.
Likes
Dash.
Dash?
Dash?
Yeah, he likes to be called Dash, yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't call poetry
too?
Poetry. He calls it Dash.
Well,
that's some good
a lot of times I dash off poems myself.
Excellent.
Nice.
I'm glad you called today. What's on your mind?
Well, I was going to read my story, but now that I've forgotten the time, oh, unbelievable. What's
on
my mind?
How long is the story?
Well, it's several pages. I mean, you know, we could do it in installments if you want, because it's going to be probably, I mean, if the show's going to end in 15 or 20 minutes, it's probably too long, unless I read really, really fast.
Or, I'll let you decide, but, or you could just leave us at a cliffhanging moment and finish it next time. Whatever
I could do that.
Like.
I could do that. All right.
Cool.
Well, with no more ado, then, I will start. And it's called The Witch of Eriche, A Cautionary Tale. Down dusty roads of recorded time, but not all that long ago, perhaps 200 years, in the small hill town of Eriche on the island of Sicily, there lived a woman, alone, who had not been born there. Eriche was and is an ancient village, a holy place to many peoples for 3,000 years, dating back to the Phoenicians, and it was not at all unusual for people to be drawn to settle in this cliff town hanging high over the sea. When this woman, named Cecilia Cenciuales, took a small cottage on one of the out-of-the-way stone-paved streets, the villagers noted that she was accompanied only by a small owl and a large orange cat. They wondered if she was wealthy and self-sufficient, and if not, how she would make her living, for it was clear from her somewhat regal bearing that she would not be joining the denizens of the darkened back alleys who catered to the needs of unhappy husbands. Soon enough, they found out. Cecilia hung a tablet painted with the image of Aradia, the moon goddess of the ancient pagan community of Tuscany, above the door lintel. In this way, the villagers knew that she was a strega, a witch, most likely one who specialized in the domestic magic of love and fertility spells so dear to the hearts of unhappy women. There were a few grumbles about Satan and darkness, but most of the inhabitants of Eriche were not troubled by the idea of a witch in their village. For belief in magic dies hard, and in Italy the practice of it was an ancient tradition. In fact, there was evidence that magic involving animal sacrifice had been practiced in Eriche itself in the crumbling Temple of Venus, which dated back to time out of mind. Word spread quickly of the arrival of the witch, and within a couple of weeks, Cecilia had a stream of visitors knocking at her door. They came at night, these women, and alone, not wanting to advertise that they needed help from the realm of magic to manage their everyday lives. It was clear from the steady traffic that Cecilia was an adept practitioner of La Vecchia Religione, the old religion, witchcraft. Obviously, whatever Cecilia was doing for these women was working. People noticed that some of their neighbors who had gone about their lives with grim determination for months or even years were now content and smiling. Some women who had been long married and childless walked about with swelling bellies, and their husbands puffed out their chests at Sunday Mass, proud of these proofs of their virility. The open secret of traffic in flesh decreased, but the women who made their living in the dark were the only ones unhappy about the fall-off in their trade. The night workers decided that the only way they could survive was to put an end to the success of Cecilia Cenciuales. Putting their heads together, they decided to enlist the help of one Rafael Candela, unmarried, handsome, and always looking for a way to make extra money. Rafael was a legendary lover and had collected a string of broken hearts that stretched from Casa Santa to Rigoletto. Pooling their coins, the women sent the most beautiful among them to bring Rafael to a meeting place. Once there, they explained their problem and offered him a handsome payment if he could break the heart and spirit of the witch who was destroying their livelihood. His eyes lit up at the thought of not only the money, but at the thought of what a feather it would be in his gaudy cap if he could bring down a powerful strega. After the customary haggling, the women and the heartbreaker agreed on a price, and Raphael returned home to plot his strategy. Being a practiced courtier with a tactician's heart, he had no doubt of his eventual success. A week after his meeting with the flesh peddlers, in the darkness of a night with no moon, Raphael made his way to the cottage of the witch Cecilia Cenciales. He rapped smartly on the door. It opened shortly, and there she stood, owl perched on her shoulder and cat at her feet. Her eyes widened in obvious surprise to see a man standing before her, for it was not usual for men to seek the services of such a one as she. "To what do I owe the honor of a visit by a man to my humble home?" she asked suspiciously. "It is not my customary practice to provide magic of the sort needed by men." "Ah, most magical of women," began Raphael smoothly, "I do have need, most urgent need, of your wisdom. Please allow me in so I can explain my sorry tale. I will pay whatever you ask if you will help me." "What I do is not for coin alone," replied Cecilia, "but I am not hard-hearted. I will listen to what you have to say and decide if I can be of assistance." And with that, she swung wide the door and allowed him to enter. They sat across a small table from each other, and Cecilia locked her gaze deeply into the eyes of the deceiver. Raphael looked back, unwavering, having had much success in conquering even the most worldly and suspicious of women, married or not. He summoned all his charm into his eyes, and indeed they appeared soft, vulnerable, pleading, even to the experienced witch who awaited his words. "I am in love," began Raphael. "You are not in love," snapped Cecilia. "You have a passionate male desire for some woman who has spurned you. You wish to bed this woman until the flame cools, and then you'll move on." Raphael lowered his head and smiled charmingly, almost to himself. "All right. I see I cannot trick you," he said humbly. "But what I feel for this woman is stronger and more overpowering than anything in my experience. I must have her. I'll die an unhappy man if I cannot taste the charms of this seductress." "Seductress," snorted the witch. "I'll wager that this woman isn't yet aware that you breathe." "Perhaps not," said Raphael agreeably. "But the attraction she radiates is powerful, irresistible." And indeed, as he said these words, Raphael noticed that the witch herself was a handsome woman, one he could well be drawn to, even without the inducement of the money promised for his destruction of her power. "All the same," he continued, "I am hoping you will help me touch her heart. I have approached her, and she acts as if I am nothing more than a fly on the wall of her kitchen. I have been discreet. I have been direct. I have brought her flowers and sweetmeats, and still she resists." He looked up again into her eyes with a directness that was disconcerting. Cecilia began to feel a certain discomfort, for Raphael's demeanor was affecting her in a way no man's had in many years. She had long been alone, and while dedicated to assisting women in need, she had had lovers in the past, men of magic and power whose strength and influence complemented her own. Summoning all her strength, she centered herself and waited for his next words. None came. "Is that all?" she demanded. "Why should I help you seduce and abandon another woman? We are sisters, we women. We need protection from men like you, not pretty words and pretty flowers and caresses that vanish once your lust has cooled." "It may be," Raphael replied seriously, "that this could be my last passion. Perhaps she is the one I have been seeking in all my bawdy adventures. You credit me with no heart at all, but I am not like other men. Only perhaps more slow in coming to it. Can you not believe that I might wish for a companion, a refuge to come home to after all these years of the chase, the conquering, and the still unsatisfied longing?" He stopped to measure the effect of his assumed sincerity. Cecilia turned her head and whispered something to the owl that still sat on her shoulder. The tiny bird nibbled at her earlobe, but if it replied, Raphael could not tell. Rising and putting the owl on its perch, Cecilia stood and gazed down into the clear but treacherous eyes of the man at the table. "You must promise me that if I agree, you will never leave this woman until she releases you herself," said the witch. "You must be faithful to her until she decides whether or not she wishes to live without you." Raphael's heart leapt in his chest. For he knew now he would have that bag of money from the women who earned it on their backs, on their knees. He gazed up into Cecilia's eyes and promised, as only a heartless man can, with his look and his words. "I promise," he replied. "I will not leave her until she releases me." "Pay me now," Cecilia said, "in coin, in full." She named a rather exorbitant amount, for this was one of her ways of determining if a client was sincere. But the man at the table did not flinch. He rose and pulled a leather purse from his pocket and counted out the fee demanded. "Here you have it," he said. "You notice I do not quibble about the price. Another proof of my honesty." "We shall see," replied the witch. "For those who break their word to me pay dearly for their falseness." She swept the coins into her hands and dumped them into a clay pot on a shelf. "You have my word that this will not be spent until my magic has succeeded." "Done then," said Raphael. "Will you tell me when I may approach her with success?" "You won't need me to tell you," retorted Cecilia. "You will feel it like a wave of water washing over you." "Good night, then, my lady. I wish you all the blessings a poor distracted would-be lover can offer." And with that, Raphael let himself out into the embrace of the moonless night.
Wow.
I screwed up
can
the
I
line
be
there.
Raphael? Can I want to be Raphael. Can I be
okay.
Raphael?
You can be
no,
Raphael.
No, I'm Raphael.
I think he's in trouble, though, man.
You'll
Is there
find
gonna
out.
Be a quiz?
You'll find out in the next installment what happens. Will there be a quiz? Well, if you don't
Is
remember
a quiz?
The story from this
cause
week,
I was
no.
trying to take notes. I don't know. You sound like my English teacher when I was in eighth grade, St. Walter's. But it's good. Very good.
I had a fun time writing it.
That's really good. All right. We're gonna cut to a song, y'all, because some people may have been drinking before they came on the show. I love you guys. Please call again.
I'll call you next week.
Start to believe that it's a lie. It's a lie.